Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tron. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fantastic, Jim. Just simply fantastic. How about yourself?
Excellent. Doing all right. Things are starting to warm up, so we're happy about that. Tonight, we have episode number 74, and yes, we're going to continue on our path. This is going to be part number three of questions and answers. Han and I have received, quite a lot. And it's, you know, it's an important subject, it's an important topic, it's an important issue. Some states are beginning to open up. Some dental offices are in the process of opening. And so it's even generating more information and more misinformation, but mostly a lot of questions. And there's a lot of people out there that are saying a lot of things. And so, you know, I think it's important that we spend at least as many questions we can get answered here in the hour period we have, to be able to at least get the right straight talk out there. Like before, for those that if you do have a question you want to call in, you can do that. Catch us on the 657-383-1442 number. And you'll come up on the board here and we'll answer it live. You don't have to give your name or anything, and that's okay. But the questions we have tonight are a variety. Obviously, we've had some cool exposure with Dr. Tom Oren in his video. I guess that thing has gone viral, hasn't it, Han?
Yes, it has. Yeah, a lot of the questions that we have received come from that particular podcast, and so you know, it's a good exposure at the same time. It gives a lot of people the resource that they can come to and get their answer. We've done the research, not saying that we know everything because things are changing constantly. As soon as anything that we know that need to be updated, we will bring it forth, and that way every one of us would know. Jim?
Absolutely. And well, the other important thing is, you know, we don't make anything. We don't sell you widgets. We don't sell you equipment. We don't sell you any pieces of parts. You know, our whole service is just that. It's, you know, information and expertise when it comes to the actual design and creation. So, you know, being a service business and not selling you pieces and parts, we're not held in a situation where maybe our alliances are torn. Really, our information is what we have available for you. So tonight, let's just jump right in. Here was one of the questions that came in from a doc over in, this was in the Chicago area. He had asked the UV light, where should it go to do the most good? Well, it depends. You got a couple things here. First of all, you got what you're using the UV light for. In all the research that Han and I have done, the UV light is an exceptionally good way to kill this pathogen. Any pathogen, anything biological, you can get rid of with the UV light. It really just depends on the amount of exposure and how you do it. Now, we break it up into two pieces. You've got airborne and you've got surface. barn, that nasty word called aerosol, right, Han?
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the big culprit.
We've got our aerosol. Well, the airborne version, where's the best way to do that? Well, in our knowledge, in our research, and by the way, we hope to next week have an engineer, an expert on the show as a guest to really get into the whole idea of mechanical conditioning of your office and what kind of options are available to us. But when we talk about airborne, where should you place the UV light to be able to do the most good? Well, it should be in your equipment, in the furnace somewhere. Now, the question is, where is somewhere? Well, the best location, it should be in the clean air stream after the air has gone through the filter, after the air has gone through the blower, after the air has gone through the coil. And there's a lot of technical things here. And if you Google the HVAC equipment and gives you a schematic, it will show you all these things. And after the air within your building has mixed with outside air. And that's a real important part. Once it's gone through all of those things, then it should be treated with the UV. So each piece of equipment is made different. Each piece of equipment is configured slightly different than the other. And so the exact location is going to have to be determined by a combination of individuals like ourselves, along with maybe your local mechanical contractor, to be able to identify the exact location where it needs to be to do the most good. And then how it should be configured, there's another whole aspect to that. So in a quick, 5-minute discussion, that is the airborne version. Now, there's other varieties of airborne version, and we'll talk about it in a second, but I want to get to the surface side. Now, on the surface, what's the easiest way? Well, obviously, you're going to have to put something up on, either in the ceiling or something mobile within the room. It's really your two options. And those lights only come on during unoccupied times. That's extremely important. It has to be unoccupied. This is extremely powerful wavelength of light that does damage to biological. And so it does damage to human skin. It does damage to our eyes. It does damage to things that, it's what it's designed for. It will kill things that are biological. We're biological. So you have to have this configured in such a way that you will not have any occupiable space. So it's either at night or while the room is shut off and locked, whatever. There's a whole lot of different ways and just a ton of particular options on how to accomplish that. And then it's just a matter of how long, how many bulbs, all that kind of good stuff. Now, Han, I want to let you talk a little bit about the UV light that is in the standalone stuff, because that's another place that you can use UV light in a filtration unit that takes care of the airborne, but doesn't take care of the surface.
Yeah. Let me add a piece to what you just talked about in terms of the surface stuff, Jim. Because this topic have not been discussed, or should I say it have not become common topic for discussions. The surface treatment using UV light, it is a very effective sterilization technique, and been used for hundreds of years, or at least 100 years, in institutions like hospitals, surgical suites. The thing that we have not been able to really gather any written document on is that the effects on the materials, the surfaces that the light, the ray hit, meaning that the most of the equipment are made of with plastic, polymers and stuff like that. And it is a known fact that it, sunlight, UV light, degrade them. How fast? We don't know. Okay, so it's an area that we're still researching, but we have not find anything that are quantifiable for us to share. So that is still in development and in search. So,
great. Now, I'll add to that, just the surgical suites have used this for years. And, they have, just like you, have a lot of plastics, they have a lot of vinyls, they have a lot of other materials, plastic laminates, corians, those kind of things, vinyls, vinyl floors, all that stuff. So it's been in there and it's been used in there. And we haven't seen or haven't been told yet that there's a major issue with the UV light destroying those surfaces, but we're still checking.
Yeah,
so
I think
it doesn't mean it doesn't mean that you shouldn't use it. It just means that there is a possibility that it may prematurely wear out some of your surfaces.
Yeah, the effect may be negligible. So
yeah,
at this point, again,
small.
A
lot of materials are already UV stabilized. They have things in them that enhances their resistance to UV light, that keeps them from fading,
right,
keeps them from prematurely degrading, that kind of stuff. You see that a lot in flooring. You look in the flooring and you'll see in the literature, their specifications, that flooring has UV inhibitors in it so that it doesn't fade.
And of course that, the reason why they have that is because there have been issues.
Right.
If you have a flooring that where the sun shines through the window and it's there for, that material is exposed to the sunlight for a duration every day, that exposure can affect that, that flooring or that counter material, whatever that material is. Therefore, that was an issue and that's the way the manufacturer had addressed it. In fact, I was having a conversation with a doctor earlier, a dentist earlier in the week, I should say that the LED light that was installed in her treatment room, she knows that she was moving a picture on the wall, and there is such a great difference in the shading behind the picture versus the surfaces around it. Okay. So it led her to believe that LED light also affects the quality of the material it shines on. Okay. Now we know that material like corian countertops, if the counter is sitting at the window and that window, the light comes through the window, after some time being exposed, it would change shape, it would fade, the color would fade, because it's a polymer. Okay, so how much it affects and degrades the material, we don't know. There is not enough information for us to come to any conclusion or anything like that. So just kind of beware when you look at, when you look at the technology to use. So that way you got no regrets. Okay. So
you can't say we didn't
bring,
tell you.
That's right. We won't tell you we told you so. Okay.
Right. So talk about the standalone filter units.
The standalone, we are talking about standalone filtration systems that are designed for healthcare facilities for it to really be effective in its performance. Besides filtering out the particulates, taking it out is easy. You know, treating, cleaning the air of odor is easy, but it's a definitely plus to have UV light as part of the unit, because the pathogen that makes its way through even the HEPA filter, because the HEPA filter only, you know, remove a certain size of particulates, and anything smaller than that will make it make its way through the system to some extent. And whatever escaped through the filter can be treated or killed by the UV light. So that in itself, the portable unit with UV light would be the preferred. You know, and then anything, you know, anything that escaped that would not capture by the portable unit will be sucked through your return air duct or your return grill. Go back into the mechanical system, get filtered again, and then eradicated through the UV light that you install within the ductwork. Answer that, Jim?
Absolutely. And that's exactly correct. So hopefully that helps at least give you some parameters and kind of jumps right into our next question that came in. This dentist was like, how in the world do I dig through all this misinformation? They use the word /crap that's out there, and who has all the right answers? Well, Han, what would you say to that?
Well, we've done a fair amount of research, so you know we hope that we have credible information to share with you. The thing that I always try to revert back to is there are institutions that have more, let me say, more authority, more credibility. That would be the CDC and your ADA, your ADA chapters. Get guidance from them first, and then do your own homework also. All right, because there's a lot of information that are being shared or peddled as expert, information and stuff like that. But do your own homework so that way the information is yours to learn, and not just simply somebody's word. We also encourage you to do your own research on the information we share with you, because we want you to own your decisions. Jim?
Yeah, don't take our word for what we say. Everything that we've presented and everything that we talk about has backup from experts, from scientists, from researchers, from individuals that have been looking at this and trying to determine what the best solution is. And again, remember the source. If you're getting information from a person or persons who are trying to sell you something, that right there should be that's a concern. What are they trying to sell you? Are they trying to sell you a bunch of widgets, a bunch of pieces of equipment? Take this filtration unit and it's going to solve all your problems kind of thing? Well, maybe, maybe not. Or, you know, are you getting information from an unbiased individual who's basically like us? Our reputation is is the most important thing to us. So we're not going to say anything that jeopardizes our reputation.
Yeah, like Jim said earlier, that we provide design services. We don't have a legion to any manufacturer. We certainly have been approached by a manufacturer to, you know, to specify their products and everything. The problem is that it would change our mode of operation, our legion. It changed our motive, and we certainly don't want that. So we research one so that we know, so that we be able to have the knowledge base to do the proper design, to help our, you know, our clients, and to help our listeners to have to be more informed, so they make more better decisions for themselves. Jim.
So, like what you know, like we told the doctor that asked this question, you know, what were you being told? And then we gave our opinion on those particular items, and then let the doctor decide what made the most sense and what actually was the correct answer to that particular set of issues that they were looking at. You know, it's just important that you have the right info to make the educated decision. We're not, I guess that's the biggest frustration that Han and I have, is that so many are just listening to, a lot of times, the wrong people that are giving them, you know, maybe a little bit of the right information, but not all the right information. And because of that, they have this false sense that, okay, this is all taken care of. But in reality, it's not. And, you know, that's our big concern. So, again, another motivation why Han and I take the time and energy and do these kind of shows to get this information out so that you guys can have it and at least be able to work from that knowledge base. That's kind of the reason why we exist, at least on the radio, right?
Jim, why don't you give an example of what you, you know, because we, you know, early in the week, today's only Tuesday, okay, and we received, you know, information yesterday that we have to, you know, to confirm and to educate our client who had the question. What is the right, you know, what is the right installation, and basically who's kind of, who's zooming who? And it has to do with where you place the UV light within the ductwork, right?
Yeah, Jim? Yeah, that's exactly the case. We had a client who was being told by a contractor that you could place the UV lamps right at the blower within their particular unit. Well, he's partially right, but for the wrong application. The old standby of placing UV lights at the blower, which is right adjacent to the coil, is to basically keep the coil clean of all the microscopic biological stuff, not just coronavirus. We're talking about everything, allergens, you know, bacteria, viruses, mold, all that kind of stuff that UV light takes care of. So you want to keep the coil clean for one reason, not to kill the biological. It's to keep the efficiency of the coil at its optimum level. So it's right in one way. Yes, the UV light does work and keeps the coil clean, but it's wrong in that UV light is going to kill the pathogen within the building, because actually it's not. It's going to kill some of it, but it's put in the wrong application at the wrong, it's, you know, it's the right stuff, but put it in the wrong application and put it in the wrong way. And the technical part about this is that the airstream is hitting the lamp basically at a 90 degree angle, as opposed to, it's perpendicular as opposed to parallel. Well, perpendicular means that that light only catches that airstream for the size of the light bulb and very small area to the left and to the right of it. Whereas, and if you have a parallel lamp, and I know this is technical, but it's very important. If you have a parallel lamp and you have like a 60-inch long lamp, that airstream is irradiated for the whole 60 inches. So the whole time that the air is blowing the length of the lamp, it's the pathogen is getting killed. So the exposure time is 60 times larger in this particular application. And effectively, you can kill the pathogen in that building in one pass, as opposed to if you use the mathematical approach, you'd have to circulate the air through that unit 60 times to get the same level of pathogen kill. That's a big difference. So how many times do you have to have the pathogen hit your body before you become affected? Well, that's another whole discussion. And actually, I think we even got some new literature, new information on that. So we might even get into that in one of these questions coming up. But that's an important aspect, but it's one of misinformation or using partially true information in the wrong application.
And Jim, that was one instant. Okay. A different project where the contractor, a local contractor, recommend that the light to be installed in the return ductwork.
Yeah. Oh, that's another
one. Yeah. I think you have to, there's a myth to this. Is that every time that we speak to a contractor, they badmouth the engineers and the architect. And they say, we don't know what we're doing. That's why they're there to fix, the work. Actually, my rebuttal is that if we're not here, they wouldn't have any work because nobody designed anything for them to work on. Again, they have equipment to sell. They have equipment to service. Therefore, most people would assume that they are the expert in this area. I beg you to do your own homework. Okay, if you remove the motive, will they give you the same answer? Will they give you the same information, same facts? Okay, their science doesn't match what they do.
Right. Okay. In that particular case, the putting the UV lamps in the return side is the absolute worst thing you can do, because what happens is, in a very short period of time, the UV lamp gets covered by all the dirt, the particles, the non-biological stuff, the dust, the dirt, everything that's floating around in that's part of that air pollution that's out there in our buildings. It coats that lamp and greatly reduces the efficiency of the UV light to kill the pathogen. So unless you want to sit there with a cloth and every whatever, and I mean at least daily, clean that lamp, do not place it in the return air side. You're basically wasting your time and your money, and you're going to have a situation where you're still going to be moving this pathogen throughout the building, and people potentially could get sick. Well, we had another question, which was kind of interesting, but it came from a doctor who maybe when they went through the video that we did with the podcast video with Dr. Ort, they didn't get to see the whole thing. But the question was the germ-free 24 product. Who and how do I get some? Well, that's going to be a real quick answer. You call a fellow by the name of Mark Bly, and his phone number is 419-466-9406, and his email address is mark@germfreeinnovations.com. And you'll get directly to him, and that's the easiest way to get information about that particular product and about what they can do. The one thing that I found, we've had Mark on the show a couple times. He was part of our podcast with Dr. Ort. But one thing I found to be extremely interesting and potentially a game changer when you think about it, because of this product, the germ-free 24 stuff. And it's, you know, effectively can last for like 28 days and be a, at least have some level of effectiveness in killing the viruses, not just corona, but others. Or, you know, it's like, where would be an interesting application of that? And we've been, Han and I have been discussing it. We've been discussing with Mark. And one of the applications that came up that hasn't been discussed was treating your filters. So effectively taking your filter out of your equipment and spraying it down with this product and putting it right back in, letting it dry, putting it right back in. Because it's on there, it doesn't dry out like alcohol-based. So it's molecularly it's there. And as the biological particles pass through your filter, even if you have just a normal filter, not a HEPA filter, just a normal filter, it's going to effectively catch a lot more of this virus particle and kill it. So I thought that would be a great application. Mark is talking with the technicians and the scientific folks to get research data on that, but he as well felt that that would be a great application and pretty easy to do. You know, every 30 days, when if you change out your filters every 30 days, you spray them down and you put them in. Kind of interesting, huh? Wouldn't you think, huh?
Yeah, that's interesting because it's almost like putting a force field on your filter, you know?
Yeah. Turning your kind of cheap, crappy old filter into a super filter in the sense that at least it has the ability to kill the virus to some degree.
It couldn't hurt.
Yeah, and we think money well spent.
Yes.
Here's a question I think we need to throw out because it was one that came to us and was like, okay, what's the best aerosol point suction device and how much do those things cost? Well, Han, I'll let you talk a little bit about that because that stuff is more your expertise than mine.
Okay, cost I don't know. Okay, I have because we don't purchase. Maybe I can reach out to Dr. Hunt and get his input because I do believe he had put his name on the waiting list. At source aerosol suction device. There are two companies that we are aware of. At least one of them, there's two. One is in Arizona by the name of ADS. They are a manufacturer. They are a global company, and the product is manufactured in China. But it is an American company. That's what that's what I know so far. The product that is probably the most attractive, also the best performance unit that we have researched thus far. It filter or suck the aerosol at source. There isn't anything that removes the aerosol out of the air by itself, totally by itself. So this machine sucked the bulk of the volume of aerosol being generated once you work, in the oral cavity. It goes through the filter. It has a HEPA filter, it has a carbon filter, and it has a UV light array. So it's a pretty efficient unit. I don't know how much it costs. What I know is this: there is a waiting list. I talked to the director of sales late last week, and he mentioned that the next shipment that they have is coming in June. So you buy it to the distributor like Shine, Benko, Patterson. So you can't buy directly from them, okay? There is no discount in term. So whatever, you know, whatever they recommend to the distributor, they can sell for more but not less. Okay, that's what I'm told. There's another manufacturer by the name of Eller Air out of Canada. They are the manufacturer, and they manufacture and build it in Canada. Similar product. Again, I don't have costs. I just know that it does, you know, the two unit does the same thing or similar technology. It's just the ADS is a lot more attractive. And the Alla Air, typically, I think Dr. Hunsinger mentioned that he have a couple of their units and it's in their lab. So it's a little bit more utilitarian in appeal, but the technology wise it's very similar. Okay, so that's what I know for now, Jim. Mm-hmm.
And I guess an important part of that whole discussion is that it's self-contained.
Mobile.
So
yes,
it's mobile, but it's self-contained, and the air that is expelled out of this unit has been filtered with a HEPA filter and a UV filter so that theoretically, per their literature, you're talking about clean air that's coming out of the end of this thing. There's
right.
maintenance that's necessary. They're going to have to be, the filter's going to have to be changed and cleaned. The lamps are going to have to be changed after so often. Just like anything, this thing just won't run and run and run and run and run because nothing will forever. So, you know, it's like, you know, no different than your vehicle. You've got to put oil in it every so often to keep the thing running. Well, in these things, you've got to do maintenance to them to keep them running efficiently. And it'll still keep working. And but if the UV light is dwindled down to nothing, then you're just spitting out air that is full of pathogen. You know, how good is it then? And it only catches a percentage of the aerosol. It doesn't catch it all.
It will capture a large bulk of it, but not
yep.
all of it.
But not all of it.
Okay. Yeah.
So you gotta understand what you're buying. You're buying something that will catch a majority, but it doesn't catch everything.
Yeah, I think the main objective is to reduce the volume of aerosol being discharged into your work environment. That's the main objective, okay? Everything else in your building system will have to do the rest. And, the PPE, you need to have the appropriate mandated PPE. But in terms of the technologies and equipment and stuff like that, there isn't a single technology that are available, at least at this time, that can make the claim that it is a silver bullet that you can use to solve all of the problems. Okay, so it's designed to solve a major issue with capturing the amount of aerosol that's being produced and this. It captures most of it so that it doesn't get all over the place. Jim? Hey, Jim?
Okay, there we go. I want to diverge a little bit into the discussion of the amount of pathogen particles. Let's put it that way. we've gotten literature, we've gotten research, and we've gotten information that just came to us here the other day that, for example, they've been doing research on areas and the generation of particles. I don't know if a lot of folks know that, for example, flushing your toilet, and they said that you can actually pass this through the particles that are in, stool and that kind of stuff. And by flushing a toilet without a lid, you effectively can spew into the air within that room 8,000 particles. We're going to say, we're going to call them little units. So you got 8,000 little particles of this virus that have spewed into the room. Now, their research has told us that all you need is to be basically intake 1,000 particles, and you're pretty much guaranteed that you're going to catch the virus. So just by one little thing like flushing your toilet, you're basically 8 times the exposure rate necessary. So what they're saying was that in this article and in this research that, for example, within your home, let's say you have one person in the home who has the virus and they're breathing over a long period of time, will build up within the space or within the house. Let's say that everybody's confined. And so everyone within the house is exposed to, you get to that magic number of 1,000 per se. Well, it's no different in your building. Think of your building. Think of your dental office that we've been told, and there's information out there, that the virus lives different periods of time on different surfaces and in different ways. But sometimes it can live on for days. It can live on for, without a doubt, hours. And so if a person who comes into your building doesn't have any symptoms but is a carrier and they're breathing, and they're breathing as they walk through your building, that creates a level, it raises your level of pathogen within your airstream. And so you have to do something with that. And that's why we're saying it's important to have a multiple layer attack plan. When you have multiple layer attack plan, you cover those things. So you have the ability to cover it at the source in your operatory, whether it's a negative air pressure, whether it's a filter unit like, this aerosol suction device or a combination of UV lamps in your ductwork and UV lamps that are used to sterilize. But, it's everywhere throughout the building. And I guess you have to think of it that way, that there's zones within your building that you're going to have higher. Is that the way? I think that's the way to put it, Hod, isn't it? That you're going to have a higher concentrations. So that's why we wanted to, we've talked about zoning your building into different compartments. I think it's important we talk just a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think now when we talk about zoning, we talk about actually design and physically
separating,
isolated the space. Okay, meaning doors, all right? Doors. It's important that that you look at, yes, you want the future in dentistry. We'll predict that it's going to affect your production a little bit. You're going to go to doors because you need to compartmentize every space where aerosol is generated so it doesn't spread and become problematic. You want to at least nip the potential infection at the source. Okay? So we label this to be a system solution approach to the entire design process, so that you don't, you're not, you know, in the days of running your wall up to the bottom of the ceiling, it's going to be gone. I mean, you basically have to compartmentize your treatment room and the entire entire clinical wing. That is the area where all of your aerosol is generated. Okay, so it's that will be the, in our opinion, will be the design strategy that we are going to implement on future design from here on. Jim?
Also in renovations, you know, as we
yes.
look in where it's possible to renovate and retrofit so that you can effectively take those open bay operatories that you may have right now and find a way to get, you know, doors on them and closures so that you can isolate from patient to patient and room to room and clinical to everything else. Because, you know, this stuff gets everywhere once it gets out, and you don't want to have the ability for it to, you know, migrate into other spaces and affect people. That's really what we're talking about now.
Yeah. I mean, Jim, there will be circumstances where the current design of the office, the clinical area, won't allow you to compartmentalize it from the rest of the building. We understand that. So when you have that scenario, your design professional will have to look at and, you know, analyze what can be done, and that way, you know, you can at least address the concern. What technology can be implemented to minimize, the amount of aerosol in your, you know, within your building, and all that stuff. So it has to be looked at, not just simply call in John, who owned a pickup truck and a utility belt, to add things or to build things, okay? Because you can approach to fix a problem and create 10 because of it. So look at everything from a systematic, from a total system approach, and fix it so that, you know, and approach that way so you are moving forward without any, you know, any hiccups.
Yeah, yep. Without a doubt. Now, Han, I would like to have the opportunity for you to have a little discussion about what you and I were talking about, and that really had, it kind of segues into what we've been talking about. Is you were relating to me that you had information or something about they were replacing flooring by placing a floating floor over carpet. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think our listeners need to hear this stuff.
Again, you know, here we were just talking about, you know, doing your research, making sure that you are not stepping on your toe trying to fix a problem. Okay, right now for the majority of the country, as you're getting back to opening your practice, you're looking at everything. What can I do? What should I do? Why should I do it? And all those are valid questions, because there still have not, there is recommendation, but there is no solid guideline from any source that you go, this is it. So a lot of people have kind of, you know, some of the doctors, I've been privy to some of the conversations, some of the doctors say, I'm just going to, you know, do what the, deal with everything with the PPE, and that's that. And I'll wait until I get more, you know, more information on what needs to be done. I don't want to waste my money. That's great. Okay. And then those that say, hey, I'm down, my office is closed, what can I do to, you know, to maybe this is the time that I'm going to upgrade and improve the aesthetic. My flooring is old. I'm going to change it new. Perfect. This is the time to do the update. But as you update, make sure it's done correctly. Okay? Don't take the cheap route. This is not humorous. I have two so far, two phone calls that I go, wow, if you know what you know, you wouldn't do it that way. One was a cabinet replacement. Yeah, if you're going to replace a cabinet in the treatment room, perhaps have your cabinet maker just duplicate it. You know, what's the height? Okay, that's the finished height. What's the width? That's the finished width. But don't, because there's guidelines, there is rule and mandates that dictate the height of the counter, that you can't change that. All right, the length, the width, the depth, I think you have a little more flexibility, but the height is the things you got to adhere to. So that was a snafu on one on the call. But I have a friend who was hired to be the observer out on a project site. And this is at a dentist's office. Okay, he's not a contractor by any means, but he was hired to be like the eye, the ears for the dentist. And he sent me a picture, and I thought, wow, okay? And a picture in the picture, you have a workman who's replacing the flooring or installing a new flooring. And it happened to be snap-on, click-on laminate flooring. Laminate usually means they are floating floors, okay? If any of you are out there thinking about installing a floating floor because your contractor or your buddy who owns a flooring store down the street, if they recommend a floating floor for your office, particularly in the treatment room, please do yourself a favor. Just stop. Okay, floating floor is nothing that you want to use in your treatment room because you're guaranteed failure. In this particular application, it looked like a floating floor is being installed throughout the entire office. The funny part is, I think they kind of did not read the manufacturer recommendation. I think the manufacturer written recommendation is the gospel guideline that everything that you purchase need to be installed to that recommendation, that written recommendation, because a lot of manufacturers warranty their product. And if you deviate from their written recommendation, they won't warranty it, okay? And I don't care if your flooring contractor has been doing laying floor for 50 years or even 1,000 years. If they install it wrong, the manufacturer won't warranty. In this particular case, they were installing the folding floor over the top of the existing carpeting.
Wow.
Who would do that? Who would do that? First of all, a floating floor usually ideally go over a hard surface, a hard substrate. When I saw that and I saw the name of the product, I went to their website and I read the installation manual, and it goes, no, you can't install it over any kind of carpet. Well, why? Because it flexes, it deflects. So when you walk over that floor, once the floating floor is installed, you walk over it, you're going to feel that sponginess. And that movement in the floor would destroy the snap-on connection. It would destroy it, okay? It's like taking a piece of metal, let's say a 10-gauge, which is pretty thick, and you bend it one direction, bend it back, and you kept bending it, eventually you're going to break it in half. Same motion. The physics of it's going to fail. And I guarantee you, because I did get the answer from the manufacturer, they won't. They won't stand behind the warranty because you just that installation was put over a substrate that was not allowed. So they won't stand behind their product. Now, the poor doctor, I know the name, but I was not asked to be involved. He's going to have, whatever the reason is, he's going to have a force system that's going to be greatly disappointed on his part once he's starting to realize that it was a wrong installation job. Wrong installer, wrong application. If it saved him, let's say $1,000 to have the carpet removed, it was worth it to do that. But right now, that's not the case. Secondly, I learned something new also, because I sent the picture to the manufacturer and say,
it's part of what we talked about before. You know, the misinformation, the wrong information that's being put out there. I'm sure the whole thing was, I need to get rid of my carpet. I need to put a hard surface down so I can keep it clean. I can hear that conversation. I know exactly what that, what was being said. And, you know, it's like, okay, let's do that. How fast can I get it done? Well, you can get it done by, we'll just put it right over top of the carpet. And we'll have it done next week. Good. Go ahead. Get it done. Wait a minute.
Yep.
What was wrong there? What was wrong there was good intention, maybe the right kind of thought, but the wrong application and definitely the wrong procedure to be able to accomplish that. Because, sure, he's going to have a cleanable surface for a little while, but then when it fails, he's going to have another set of mistakes and issues that he's going to have to deal with that, is going to cost him dearly, because flooring's not cheap. We all know that. And to take it up and put it back down again is not cheap at all. And then on top of this, you're looking at a product that is not warrantied. So when it does, in fact, fail prematurely, the doctor is going to be stuck footing the bill. And the contractor is going to say, hey,
you told me you can.
Yeah, it lasted a year. I'm good. Yeah. Maybe it will last a year. But what happens in year two?
The sad part, Jim, is this. Any decent carpenter can lay down a laminate floor because it doesn't take a genius, okay? You snap it together, you cut it where it needs to be and stuff like that. But the main thing that I find that's really unfortunate is that, yes, they may be able to install the floor. It don't seem like they care to read the instructions, okay? And that's the part. Because if you read the manual, the installation manual, it says don't put it over carpet.
Well, actually, it says don't put it over anything except for hardboard. Particularly, they like to put it over top of Luon if you have wood, or directly on smooth cement that it's a certain level of smoothness, because it will telegraph the texture of what's underneath it. It's just part of the product. It's what happens.
The floating, yeah, Jim, the floating floor are usually more stiff planks, so like at least a quarter of an inch thick. You know, they're pretty hard. They're called floating because it's not glued down. Okay.
Right.
If the substrate are not the right substrate, you're gonna have a spring in your, underneath every time you walk across that floor. In this case, you definitely will. And that's not, at the floor will guarantee to fail way before it was designed to. Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So
a good example
of you need to talk to the right people to give you the right advice. Well, hopefully, we've blown through an hour. We did get through more questions than two or three, so that's good. And keep them coming in. If you have any questions, Han and I are here and available. Please feel free. And by the way, for those that asked the question, the phone was fixed at the office, so now it's forwarded directly to my cell phone. So there was a technical glitch there for a little while. So, you know, you can get a hold of us. Get us on the 800 number, go to our website, send us an email. We're available to answer your questions. And who knows, maybe we'll answer them here live on the show as well for everybody else to listen. And as you can tell, we haven't told people who asked the question so that you don't have to worry about being embarrassed. But
our mantra is, the only dumb question is that one you don't ask.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So we're here. Feel free. Give us a call. We'll gladly help. Hopefully, as you begin the process of doing what you need to do to open up, things go well. And you definitely don't install floating floor over top of carpet or UV lights in the wrong place and all that kind of cool stuff. All right, Han, I appreciate, we definitely appreciate our listeners. We're thankful for what you guys do and you spending your time with us, because I know your time's valuable just as well as ours. This is important stuff. So thank you for spending the hour with us. So like I say, we hope to have our HVAC expert next week. With that, Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, our next week guest is has a ton of information that I'm sure is going to help you. Okay. Again, if you need to have if you're in the process of designing or thinking about an office and want to have a consultation with any of us, reach out to us on our website, which is www.hatdesign.com. and request for a consultation. Meanwhile, appreciate the hours that you spend with us. Certainly have fun. Hopefully you learn a few things or two. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.